welcome everybody to the NFL Weekly Recap Show. I always get these damn names mixed up. It's just too many names. Even when we keep it simple, it's too much. But I'm your host, IBS Yeezus, and always with me, my arch nemesis, the stat hit himself, Joe the Brain Mats.
So we are not coming to you guys after a Giants and 49ers win this week. So.
No, we are not, unfortunately. Which, you know, I thought, you know, I did say I wasn't going to do a damn show if the Niners didn't win again. So, but here we are. Since we're already starting, might as well finish it. Let's see. We started with Thursday night. Cowboys visiting the New Orleans Saints. Saints still just haven't gotten healthy. Story here is that I think we all can just burn this bridge of Taysom Hill as a quarterback.
Yeah, Taysom Hill, you know, not an untalented football player. You know, he ran for 100 yards in this game. But the tale of him as a quarterback, you can just look at the splits on his throws under 10 yards, over 10 yards. Under 10 yards, completed two-thirds of his passes for 188 yards, one touchdown, one pick. Throws 10-plus, 3 for 14, 76 yards, one touchdown, three picks. So he completed as many passes to the Dallas Cowboys as he did the Saints if he was thrown past 10 yards. So it's not happening.
I've never seen a quarterback with so many balls batted down or tipped. Like, it was just ridiculous, man. I don't know what that was about. If just the Cowboys were just aware that it was easy to just get your hands up when he throws or what. But there is one interception that like just puzzled me. I think it was the last one where he tried to, like, the running back, I think, was running to his right, towards the right sideline. Taysom kind of half rolled out and tried to like sidearm it to him, and he just threw it right to the defender. Like, how do you not see him? I don't know, man. It was not the most entertaining game.
No.
But also, underlying story here is that, one, I think the Cowboys need to sit Zeke for a couple weeks. I know people don't want to hear that with their division games coming up. But if you're the Cowboys, worst case scenario, you're still in the playoffs regardless, you would hope, at this point, having only lost four games. I mean, I really think Zeke's overall health means a lot more to Dallas for their long-term goals than this week-to-week thing. I mean, the guy's visibly injured, like visibly slow after getting hit on just about anything. Slow to get up off the ground. I just think that knee really needs a break.
Yeah, over his last four games, 3.2 yards per carry. He doesn't have one game where he's gone over four in the last month. And, you know, obviously Tony Pollard is not exactly the worst case scenario for a backup. They had a 58 yard run in this game, which was, you know, the biggest play of the game for the Dallas Cowboys offense. So, yeah, I don't hate that idea. Nice get right game for the Dallas defense. You know, we said after Thanksgiving, it seemed like it was Micah Parsons versus the Raiders. This time the rest of the team showed up. Even Trayvon Diggs, he had a pick, only gave up 15 yards in coverage. So, the rare not feast or famine week for Trayvon Diggs.
They're playing the Saints. I'm not reading into that.
Right.
Bullshit.
I mean, it could continue against the rest of the division, like you just mentioned. It's not like it's a murder's row of quarterbacks in the rest of the NFC.
Yeah,
but yeah, that more of a concern long term when they're in the playoffs, what this defense will be. But they should be fine down the stretch here.
Yeah, it could have been worse. And as a Cowboy fan, I'm happy to see them bounce back. Rolling into that's just a test to see if Ronnie listens. Rolling into the next game, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers came into Atlanta, and I mean, you could say steamrolled because the Falcons didn't score the entire second half. 30-17, Buccaneers won. Tom Brady, pretty much flawless yet again, over 350 yards passing, four touchdowns, one interception. Godwin had 15 catches, 143 yards. Russell Gage, 11 catches, 130 yards. And Matt Ryan didn't play awful. 30 for 41, 297 yards. But, you know, ultimately, just not enough talent on the Atlanta side. Yeah. And one of the things that was kind of shocking to me early on was how well the Falcons were able to move the ball on the ground against this Buccaneers team.
That was the big surprise of this game, at least in the first half, where, yeah, they ended up with 120 on the ground. I do think like 80% of or something along that lines came in the first half when the offense could actually move a little bit. Brady did have the one flaw, which is he threw a pick six at the very end of the first half, which made this game 20-17, and the final was 30-17. So like you said, Atlanta really just did nothing the entire second half.
The pick six. Yeah.
The pick like six Russell Gage is the only guy who really did much through the air in this game for Atlanta, and that's just not going to do it.
I don't understand why they can't find more more targets for Kyle Pitts. I mean, seven targets for Kyle Pitts is just never going to get it done, man. I mean, they used to force the ball to Julio. Like, Julio would get 20 fucking targets no matter what. And you telling me Kyle Pitts can only get seven? This man threw 41 passes, and only seven went to Kyle Pitts. I've got an issue with that.
Yeah, when Tajay Sharp and Olamide Zaccheaus each have five targets, you know, we don't. I know Matt Ryan likes to spread the ball around. It's nice in theory, but those guys they're not going to do it for you. They've got to figure out some way to free Pitts open more often in this offense. I know it's hard with no Calvin Ridley. Gage is really just a slot guy, but they've got to find a way to free him up. Like you said, like if you just force it to him. I mean, honestly, like they scored 0 points the second half. Just throw jump balls to Kyle Pitts and see what happens.
Darren Waller gets like 14 targets a game, and we all know he's getting the ball every single play. Yeah. So I'm like, at some point, and I'm pretty sure, didn't they get the Titans old offensive coordinator? Is that where?
Yeah, Arthur Smith is the head coach.
So I expect more. Also, want to take this time to point out to Keith that Godwin had 17 targets and he caught 15 passes. That's true chemistry right there. and I mean, honestly, he just operates within the like frame that Tom Brady is comfortable with right now. I didn't mean anything. I didn't really think what I said about Mike Evans and Brady's somewhat questionable chemistry was like a big deal. I thought that was like popular opinion, you know. You can see it in most of their games. You can see it, and he's obviously more comfortable with Godwin and AB because they operate in that intermediate space, and they're crisp route runners. His chemistry with Gronkowski going vertical is on par, where honestly Mike Evans he's typically the odd man out, in my opinion. When everything's clicking, all cylinders go, he's the odd man out a lot of times. Like, Gronk's going to get his, Godwin's going to get his, AB's going to get his, and then we'll try to give Evans enough to keep him happy. But Sunday was fine. Caught 7 out of 10 targets, 99 yards. But what I'm saying, me personally, like I showed in the statistics I sent him, if Godwin's at 76% of his, he catches 76% of his targets, and AB catches 69%, and Gronk catches like 72%, but your wide receiver one is at 60%, that's on any other team, that would be a concern. On the freaking Buccaneers with Tom Brady and all those weapons I just named, not really a big deal. But imagine
I think even beyond Brady, Mike Evans has always been a little bit of a, you know, he'll have the 120-yard, two-touchdown game, and then he'll follow it up with two receptions for 35 yards or something. He's always been kind of an up-and-down guy, I think, in a way that, like, Godwin or AB, especially when AB was at his peak, those guys are getting you stuff every single week.
I rock with Mike Evans, though. That's my guy. He got to get his head straight.
Like, just to throw this, Evans' career catch percentage is 57%.
Yeah, and that so, like, is not the way to make yourself available to Tom Brady.
So I had two of his 3 years where he's gone over 60 or with Brady. So that just shows you, obviously, that Brady's that good. But yeah, Evans has always kind of been, he'll make your contested catches. It'll be impressive. But like you said, he's not the crisp route runner that Godwin or AB is.
Yep. I guess the other storyline is the off the field issue here with AB getting his COVID shot, finally the actual COVID shot, and what the discipline would be for the Buccaneers. I mean, for real, man, it's not serious enough for me to risk a Super Bowl on it. I feel like Bruce got to understand he only got about 3 more years max with this window open. He better win as many.
I would say including this year.
Yeah, 3 years. Including this year. So one way to really make Tom Brady come to San Francisco at 50 is to get rid of AB. All right. Still talking NFC West, but not the Niners. Cardinals went to Chicago, won 33-22. Finally got everybody back, I think, in this game. There was plenty of Kyler Murray to go around, and I do believe we had some DeAndre Hopkins sightings.
Yeah, he caught a touchdown in the
I said, beautiful catch, actually. You know, I hate on DeAndre from time to time because he does push off a lot. People don't want to admit that, but he does.
That's fair.
Yeah, but hands are probably second to none, for real. Like, I would even argue at the end of his career, we probably need to start talking about him being like all time hands, like not the best, but in that conversation, like this guy can make some catches. And it's fitting that somebody like that would replace Larry Fitzgerald, who was just unbelievably reliable.
But didn't Larry Fitz have more tackles than drops in his career? I think that was
that. More tackles than drops. Having seen him his whole career, because we faced him twice a year, he was incredible. James Conner, just grinding, tough back, 20 carries, 75 yards on the ground, 2 receptions, 38 yards, and an awesome touchdown as well. If I had a little criticism, it would be that the Bears outscored them 15-12 in the second half, but they probably throttled down. I mean, they were up 21-7, ended up being 24-7 at some point. Andy Dalton kept turning the ball over. He had 4 interceptions yesterday. So I guess at some point they just kind of were like, the most important thing at this point, especially being 10-2, is just to get out this game healthy.
I mean, yeah, Kyler only threw 15 passes in this game. And part of that is, of course, he also, scrambled around. He had 10 rushes for 59 yards and 2 scores. But, yeah, they were clearly not trying to just light up the scoreboard in this one, especially, like you said, Dalton throws 4 picks. You're not overly worried about it. And then for the Bears, David Montgomery was basically the offense in this game. 141 yards and a touchdown. But it's not enough if your QB turns it over 4 times.
Why is Matt Nagy still a coach? Why isn't he been fired?
The simple answer is the Bears, in their entire history, which now spans 100 plus years, I believe, have never fired a coach in season. So I would say, Sunday night, Monday morning, when the season ends, that's when Matt Nagy will be gone.
Some traditions are made to be broken, man. You gotta get this guy out of here, man. And I've been very disappointed in the Andy Reid tree, and I've long speculated that Doug Peters, even though Doug won a Super Bowl,
it was
after he lost Frank Wright.
That's true.
That tenure where people were like, maybe this dude wasn't all that. And then obviously Matt Nagy's tenure in Chicago, I believe that's why people won't hire Eric B. I think that's why they don't want to give him a chance. They're like, well, we've seen this
before. It doesn't help, that's for sure.
We've seen this before. And it doesn't help that offense is now struggling too a little. So,
But like the thing that keeps coming up to me, especially as a Giants fan who's hoping that we'll just fire everyone, is you look at all the like hyped up guys at the end of last season who didn't get hired away. It's like everyone is struggling. Mm-hmm. Like the Ravens pass offense is just garbage. So why would you hire Greg Roman? Brian Daboll's, the Bills have been up and down all year. Joe Brady got fired. Like Everywhere, it feels like.
Oh, actually, you know what? We're not going to get to Joe Brady because we don't have a Panthers game. Save it for a Panthers game. But yeah, that's some, I'm calling shenanigans on that.
That's scapegoating.
They promoted his offensive coordinator from Baylor. Come on. And then they tried to put an article on the Baylor offense when Rule and this guy were together, averaged 34 a game. Come on, man.
The Big 12?
Yeah, don't disrespect the NFL like that. Granted, I'm not that high on the NFL from time to time myself, but there's a huge difference between your Big 12 offense.
Joe Brady's college offense averaged a lot of points, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, right? They were fucking incredible. Like the
greatest offense of all time.
Yeah, and he got fired in the middle of the season.
It helps to have Joe Burrow instead of Sam Darnold, but whatever. Yeah.
Funny tidbit for that, too, since we're transitioning to another team. Joe Brady didn't get fired on Saturday because Matt Rhule couldn't reach him, which I found to be funny. Like, you can't find your assistant coach to talk to him. Like, I mean, it's a bye week. I get it. But, like, shouldn't you guys?
That's the weirdest part, though, is why do you fire him on the Sunday of your bye week? Why wouldn't he get fired Monday? And then you give your new OC a whole extra week to work on a game plan.
Because he couldn't reach him on Saturday, Joe. That's what I just said.
They couldn't reach him the whole week. They could, Sunday to Saturday?
According to Matt's presser, the soundbite was that he wanted to, you know, do it as soon as possible because he felt like it was better to do it now rather than later. So he went to reach out to him on Saturday and couldn't reach him the entire time.
Matt could do whatever he wants. He's got a 7-year contract with 5 more years after this one. So,
well, when you fire your offensive coordinator, you better, and you got Cam Newton, the quarterback, too, so you better figure it out. Chargers, Bengals. I'm going to go ahead and say I'm a little shocked here. Chargers won 41-22. I've got a grievance. And we can just go ahead and knock that out now. At some point in the game, let me see here. I'm looking at this. I want to say it was the Chargers went up 24-0 in the second quarter. Then the Bengals.
This was a weird game.
Yeah. Then the Bengals scored 24-13. Then they get a field goal 24-16, and then they get another touchdown. So it's 24-22. I don't understand the 2-point conversion. Idea. Like he was up 8. He was up 8. It was I'm trying to figure out at what point in the game it was, and I can't tell from the scoring summary. But at some point it was an 8-point game, and for some reason the Chargers coach thought that going for 2 would be the better option. And luckily, somebody jumped off sides or something, and they ended up not doing it. And people are defending that as an analytical move. I don't understand. And I got, I think I said on the thread, it obviously didn't matter. And that, here it goes right here. When they went up 31-22, that's when he was going to go for it. It was after 61-yard fumble return. They were going to go for 2, and somebody false started or something, and they ended up having to kick the field goal. But if you're up, let's say the score is 30-22. You still got plenty of time.
Right. So, they're up 8, and this was the very beginning of the fourth quarter, right?
Yeah. Why would you put yourself in a situation to where the team only needs one drive to essentially tie the game? Because let's say you go up 9, the Bengals come back and score, you probably knock off like 4 or 5 minutes of time with them having to drive down the field and score. But they have to do that twice. They have to score twice. That's the whole point of the game, is that they have to score twice. When we talk about analytics, or at least my impression of what analytics means, it's like you're trying to put yourself in a situation where you control your destiny at the end of the game. So if you are in a situation like like yesterday with the fucking Bills. Why would you kick the field goal and with like 7 minutes left in the game? It doesn't really change anything because it's a 4-point game. You're still going to need another possession. Whereas if you don't get this conversion, you get a 3-and-out, you get better field position, you're right back in that situation to win the game. Whereas if you know, let's say he makes that field goal, they might not get the ball back. We saw an 8-minute drive a couple weeks ago. Hell, we've seen that in college. Guys doing it in 6-7-minute drives and stuff like that. You might not get the ball back. So that's kind of the idea. So 8 is a 1-possession game. 9 is a 2-possession game. What analytical data is telling you to risk?
Right, which I have no idea. You and I discussed this yesterday. I looked up a 538 article from like a year ago about it, and the article was very clear that in that situation, the analytics also say, unsurprisingly, kick the extra point and go up 9 because, as you pointed out, it's especially when you get late into these games. If you're in the fourth quarter, it's all about how many possessions you have left. That's why we get angry when teams kick goals down 4 late in the fourth. And so, the exact same thing applies here. It made no sense. Obviously, the false start allowed them to regroup there and just go ahead and kick it. But bizarre choice by Staley. I do generally love him for his aggressiveness, but that's just needless aggressiveness on that one. And, yeah, just a weird game. Like you said, 24-0, then it's 24-22, and then it's 41-22. So just 3 different runs, but bad news for the Bengals. 2 of them were by the Chargers. Both QBs were really good in this game. Herbert lit it up, 317 yards, 3 touchdowns.
I disagree. I don't think Joe Burrow played that well.
Burrow played well. 24-40.
He threw 2 interceptions and 2 really dumb interceptions.
No. He threw 1 dumb interception. The other one, he throws a perfect pass to Jamar Chase running down the right sideline. Chase backs it behind him for a pick. That was a 71-yard touchdown that he turned into a turnover. I love Jamar Chase, but he has 8 drops on the year. That's the 3rd most of the NFL. So Burrow
to the season complaining that the ball size was different. So
Burrow in this game got sacked 6 times. And he took 2.6 seconds to throw in this game. He was not holding the ball an egregious amount of time. So his line was letting him down. And then he had 2 other drops by his receivers outside of the Jamar Chase one. So I think Burrow played pretty well considering what the rest of the team was doing here.
The Bengals line didn't protect him?
I know, shocking, right?
Jamar Chase wasn't good enough to protect him either? Because that's what we've been hearing all year.
T. Higgins did show up in this game again. T. Higgins has been going off the last couple weeks.
Yeah. It's funny. It's probably the only game where I could really be a dick about that. I'm still saying Sewell was the better pick long term for Burrow's health, but Burrow typically gets hurt.
Or maybe Slater. Slater's been awesome this year.
Yeah, somebody. Yeah, Slater's been great. Bengals they're just a goofy team, but they're young. I think they're playing with house money at this point. I fully expect these guys to figure out, because to me, they're a team that's figuring it out on the fly right now. And with their youth, that I think that makes them very, very dangerous next year. So the more they get games like this, the more challenge they get, the deeper they get in maybe a playoff run is going to be fantastic for this team's future and its near future too.
Yeah, this whole season at this point, it feels a little bit like house money for the Bengals. I think most people are probably looking at the season saying 7 wins would be a good season for the Bengals, and they're 7 and 5 right now. Mm-hmm. Obviously, this year, this is a rough loss because the Chargers will now have any tiebreaker over the Bengals, and that could come into play here. But, yeah, I think this is a Bengals team that's clearly trending upward. I will say this was one of the easiest picks for me when I was making my ESPN picks, just because I looked at it and I said, well, the Bengals looked great last week and the Chargers look bad. So that will obviously reverse because that's the only thing that makes sense anymore in the AFC.
I didn't like the Chargers per se just because they haven't played that well on the road. But I don't think I was fully convinced the Bengals, because I said something along the lines of, well, the Bengals have bad losses on their record, because the argument was who's better, the Bengals or the Ravens, I think it was the conversation. And I said, well, the Ravens don't have any bad losses. And Ronnie corrected me on the Dolphins, but I was like, that's a Thursday night game. I was like, I've seen the Bengals have two in a row bad losses before that bye week. So, yeah, just like I said, the team is figuring it out. Good win for the Chargers.
Two teams really that are figuring it out. And just one of them had their on game this week.
Those turnovers were just, whew, that fumble was even worse, man. And then we get to the surprise of the week. The one time I didn't bet on these fuckers, the Lions got their first win.
I feel like we should have known because the Vikings refuse to play any games that aren't decided by one score. It's just not in their DNA, apparently.
Man, it's there's just nothing I can say, man. They lost Thielen. I don't know if he's going to play this Thursday either. But Justin Jefferson had 11 catches, 182 yards, and a touchdown. And he lost. Like, that's crazy. And then the way they lost, I don't know.
I don't know what the coverage was on that.
Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Why are you playing 5 yards into the end zone on the last play of the game?
Why are you playing 5 yards in the end zone on the last play of the game? And why are you only rushing three? I had issues with the cover zero that the Patriots ran last night, but only because the middle, like that right middle area was wide open because the guy who was supposed to be covering Beasley was essentially cheating on the outside receiver to the left, who I think might have been Diggs. I don't know. Or it could have been Sanders. But anyway, it was supposed to be basically 3-on-3. And he kind of made it 2.5-on-3 because he was out of position. Josh Allen obviously didn't see Beasley and didn't try to make the throw. So it was a gamble that worked out. But in those situations, you are better off bringing pressure than sitting back and giving somebody time to find the soft spot in your zone.
My favorite part, too, is they're playing off the guy who'd been targeted 11 times before that play. Like, Amon-Ra St. Brown was the guy in this game for the Lions. He had 10 receptions. So, again, just total loss here as to what they're doing. And, I mean, Mike Zimmer, unless something really different happens these last few weeks, they go on a run, they win a playoff game, he's getting fired. And I think he's generally a good coach, definitely a good defensive coach, but I mean, the defense lost this game for him. I mean, Cousins had 340 yards. Madison runs for 90 and a touchdown. Like you said, Justin Jefferson is, you know, putting his name in there for best receiver in the NFL. And he gave up 29 points to the Lions. You let Jared Goff throw for almost 300 and three scores. I mean, it's just inexcusable what happened in this game for a team in the playoff hunt.
They suck. They just absolutely suck. So
Mike Tice, former Vikings coach, tweeted after the game that his sorry ass never lost to the Detroit Lions. So that's where it's at right now.
Man, I remember when I said the Lions probably were the first team to go 0-17, and they got a fucking tie in their first win. Oh man. We'll see how if they can carry that momentum into the next week. Colts, Texans, not allowed to go over here. Just the most one-sided game of the year, 31-0. I mean, just total domination by the Colts.
And an
easy win heading into, I want to say, a big matchup against the Patriots. Didn't they got the Patriots this week? I haven't
looked. I think do the Patriots have a bye?
Let me check, Moscato. And I try not to look ahead when we do this show because I don't want to be talking about, you know, the week ahead when we're supposed to recap. But I can double check real quick. It's right on my
So I have a question for you about the Colts. Where are they in your power rankings, at least just in the AFC right now?
Are we talking about just against the spread, or are we talking about just like in general?
Just in general, like, I guess we could say against the spread. Like, if they're playing a game neutral field, against the other teams in the AFC. Where are they ranking in right now?
All right. So both teams have a bye week and then they face each other. So
okay, that's what it is.
You're right. I've been higher on the Colts than most people. I thought that they had a pretty rough start early on. I've got them as a top five team in the AFC when all things are equal. It's just, especially with Jonathan Taylor playing like he's playing, I think their defense is a little underrated at times, especially against the pass, because they're not
big name people. They force a lot of turnovers.
Yeah, and that was the reason why I kind of ranked them a little higher. And again, they got the Seahawks early before they just completely collapsed, which was tough. They got the Rams early when they were healthy and not, you know, everybody hadn't figured them out. And then I think they got the Buccaneers kind of early too. Oh no, they didn't get the Buccaneers. It was another team last week.
They almost won that game.
But there was another team that they went up against, and I was just like, dude, this is like murderer's row.
Well, I think they played the Titans twice before all the Titans got hurt. So
yeah.
That was bad luck that their division games didn't break differently here.
So, yeah, I mean.
Yeah, they have a weird schedule. They play only the Jags from their division in the last 4 weeks of the season, which is a little bizarre, but
yeah. So here's their first like five or six games. It was the Seahawks, the Rams, the Titans, then they got the Dolphins, the Ravens, the Texans, and then the Niners, and then back to the Titans. Like that was, and I know you, if you recall, it was around that time when they were under 500 when they got to the Niners, and I was still saying that I thought this was a better team and they would turn it around. So at 7-5. I think they've got a solid chance at catching the Titans, but they're gonna have to get by the Patriots and the Cardinals, which are right now the two hottest teams in the NFL. So
yeah, the good news for them is 6-3 in conference. So two of their conference losses were just to the Titans. So they have a good chance to win tiebreakers in a wild card situation if they can they got to get a split on the Cardinals Patriots though.
Yeah,
I would take the Colts over any team in the AFC North right now.
Yeah, I would take the Colts over any team in the AFC North.
And anyone in their division now, too. I mean, obviously, this is a different Titans team than the one that they played, but I think they're better than I think it's like Chiefs, Bills, Patriots. Those are the only three that in the AFC where I'm like, I'd probably take them over the Colts.
I think the Colts match up the best to give the Patriots a fit as it stands right now.
I could see that.
And part of it's just a matchup thing, I think, to me. But we'll see. Because I'm still trying to figure out what I'm getting from the Patriots. I'm not sure. I feel like there's something off. They're a good team, and they're playing well above what I thought they would be, even with Belichick as their coach. But like, there's just something about the amount of field goals that they kick that, and their this dependency on the defense to keep making play after play after play, with drive stalling out or just again having to kick field goals, it makes me think that teams that are more efficient in the red zone will give them problems.
Right. Eventually they lose a game because they kick three field goals.
Because they're not getting seven. So, it's really. It's a criticism that I typically have with teams when they used to play the Chiefs ever since Batty took over. But it's a criticism I used to have when Manning was with the Colts. And then when Brady was peak Brady, like you can't beat these teams. You can't beat these prolific offenses expecting to kick field goals. Like you've got to put points on the board no matter how good your defense is. If you're not driving the ball and getting points, giving them some confidence that you got their back, they're gonna fail at some point. So I'll kind of talk a little bit more about that as we get on later. So yeah, Colts Texans 31-0. Colts have an opportunity to put themselves in the conversation of spoiler in the AFC, but again, they've got to win these next two games. Giants, Dolphins. Giants had their backup quarterback in. It's not really much to say there. Tua and company did enough to win, but it really wasn't that impressive. They won 20-9. I feel like if the starting quarterback Daniel Jones had played, we might be having a different conversation. But
I mean, I think it would have been an actual NFL game if Daniel Jones had been out there. And then we were also down two receivers, starting receivers, and then Galladay got banged up and wasn't really effective at all in the entire second half. So it's not a surprise the way this game went, considering all that. Just to show how putrid it was for the Giants, Glennon started 8 of 8 and finished 23 of 44. So it just got uglier as it went. You know, Tua's continued to just kind of do whatever he needs to do. This is three straight games. He's completed over 70% of his passes. Granted, you know, it's the Jets, Panthers, Giants. It's not a murder's row there. Mm-hmm. But the most disturbing thing for me was actually in a post game. Joe Judge got asked about a decision to punt on 4th and 2 from the Dolphins 46. This was late in the third, Giants down 10-6. His quote was, "We're executing for 60 minutes to try and win. We felt it was necessary to try to get Riley Dixon," that's the punter, "involved early, as we knew he was going to be big for us this week." You should never want to get your punter involved. That's what? Not how you win games. I know what? Mike Glennon's the quarterback, and that makes you less confident, but that's actually more of a reason to go for it, because you don't know how often you'll even get on the Dolphins' side of the field. So, you know, Giants fans, just continues to be painful to watch. Dolphins, I mean, hey, God bless them. Every game they win, that's a worse pick for the Philadelphia Eagles. So, hey, that's the silver lining for me in this one. Is our pick got better and the Eagles pick got worse, but God, it was ugly to watch as a Giants fan.
The punter, man.
Yeah. Why? I know you're a special teams coach, but we don't need to try to get the punter involved.
That's awful, man. That's awful. I still say the Dolphins have an outside shot of getting into the playoffs. Just kind of depends on how things shape out for them. They can't lose anymore, obviously. I don't think 9.
Right. Nine I think what they get the Patriots week 17, which or week 18, I guess now. So otherwise, yeah, it's Jets, Saints, Titans, Patriots. So if you think the Patriots might be resting guys, or even, you know, there's a history of the Patriots blowing a game in Miami in December or January. So it's not impossible that they win out, in which case they'll have a shot.
Yeah, I agree. I'm sighing because I'm just like, man, the Patriots, man, just doesn't make sense, but it's there. Eagles taking on the Jets, 33-18. You know, I hate Chris Berman, but that thing is absolutely hilarious to me. Minshew came in 20 for 35, 242 yards, 2 touchdowns. I love the guy. I can't help it. Miles Sanders, 24 carries, 120 yards. I think he got hurt.
Finally gave the ball to Miles Sanders.
Yeah, and they have been running the ball very well. You know, one day we'll have a game go by where Zach Wilson doesn't turn the ball over, but it won't be that today. I wonder what's the streak for most consecutive games with the turnover? I mean, he's got to be up. I honestly don't recall any game other than maybe the game that he got hurt, and he might have had a turnover before that. I'm going to look that up and text you later and see, just because I'm really curious, because, I mean, this guy is like a walking turnover every single game.
This game was an odd one for him because his first half, he was legitimately close to perfect. 12 of 14, 108, 2 scores. The 2 incompletions were drops. And then the second half, I mean, they obviously – the Eagles got a lot more pressure on in the second half. Josh Sweat and Jason Hargrave really came after him. But, yeah, the first half he was good. And the second half, they, you know, I guess the clock struck midnight and turned back into a pumpkin. But they couldn't get much going. Although Elijah Moore continues to be productive, the one consistently productive guy in this Jets offense, which 6 for 77 and a touchdown.
All right.
But we'll see if the rest of the offense ever catches up.
The single season mark for most consecutive games with an interception is held by 3 players, 1 including Tom Landry, and it is 6 games. six games
so
that, in a row.
So that's just interceptions.
Yeah, and that, well, I was just looking for interceptions too, honestly. Ooh, he's lucky. He went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games, and in the game he got hurt against the Patriots, he didn't throw an interception.
That's, yeah, the one game he hasn't thrown a pick.
Yeah, and he got hurt on October 24th, came back November 28th, and promptly threw an interception. And December 5th threw an interception. So, yeah, honestly, he would have the record. I think it's fair to say he would have the record.
It's hard to imagine he would have played and thrown 20 more passes against the Patriots without a pick. So, yeah, it's a
– That's crazy.
It was right there.
Poor guy. I like them, too, coming out of BYU.
I mean, I still have some hope long term, you know, I think.
I know. I've seen this before with Sam Darnold. I'm good. Everything the Jets touched.
I mean, does Trevor Lawrence really look that much better than Zach Wilson this year?
Trevor Lawrence will be fine. He's going to be a great like fullback at some point.
That's all Urban Meyer QBs are. Yeah.
Well, and also the Trevor Lawrence defense, apparently they're 13 weeks in and people don't know their route. So I'm pretty sure that
that doesn't help. But again, sign of bad coaching in Jacksonville.
Riverboat went to Vegas. Riverboat won. It's only fitting. Washington football team, a.k.a. the John Does, a.k.a. the Orphans, beat the Las Vegas Raiders. I mean, isn't that what you got to be? You don't have a home. You don't have a team name. You're just there. Logan Thomas got hurt. That's big news, unfortunately.
That was a bummer.
Yeah, and I'm not a big Hokie fan, but obviously I wish him well. Anybody that can switch positions and still be effective at the highest level, I think, is just a special player. And it's unfortunate he got hurt again. But, I mean, Heineke's winning football games.
Somehow, some way.
But, yeah, he's winning football games. And you know, the Raiders just haven't been right since Ruggs was off the roster.
They looked great last week against Dallas.
Yeah, in spurts. And then obviously they won the game, but I don't know. It's just something about the consistency not being there.
And then obviously Darren Waller being out does not help. Hunter Renfro was pretty much the offense for the Raiders. And, you know, God bless Hunter Renfro, but if he's not only your main option, but almost your only option, it's going to be a problem. They couldn't get anything deep going on with Deshaun or Zay Jones in this one.
Yeah. And Josh Jacobs is so talented. I just don't understand how they can't run the ball.
Well, we're going to see more of him, I guess, because Kenyon Drake, I believe, broke his ankle. So,
ow.
Darn. Should be a lot of Josh Jacobs the rest of the way. We'll see.
Let's see. Gibson had 23 carries for 88 yards.
Yeah, good.
I mean, that's just it. I mean, they did enough to win. It was 7-3 going into the half, and this is a prime case of why, you know, you got to put more points on the board. You need touchdowns. The John Doe scored 2 touchdowns, and the Raiders only scored 1 touchdown, and that's essentially the game because the Raiders They had 3 field goals. If they had just scored, one of those field goals was a touchdown, they're winning.
Yeah, and now the Raiders are the 10th seed in the AFC, and Washington is all the way up to number 6 in the NFC. So they're in the playoffs right now.
I cannot believe it. Big game for the John Does coming up. In a few weeks, or coming up is this week actually, with the Cowboys. So
yeah,
definitely want to see that. Jags visited the Rams, 37-7. Nothing really.
No surprises in this one.
Nothing there. Ravens Steelers. Oh my God, Ravens Steelers. Ravens 19, Steelers 20. Let's just be. I'm gonna keep it a buck here, and we can. Really run through the last 3 games. But why would you put you're the one seed. You're the one seed. Why would you put that in jeopardy with Lamar Jackson's arm and not Justin Tucker's foot? And if I hear you say Marlon Humphrey was hurt, I'm going to remind you that Big Ben averages like 5 yards a pass. It's not relevant.
So I just want to be clear on your criticism here. Is it the fact that they called a passing play there, or is it just the general idea of going for two?
Well, I believe in starting at the source. The general concern is that you went for two. Then my eye twitches that you tried to pass the ball in that situation. Like, you couldn't come up with a creative run. Like, you went, and the pass was like the most obvious outlet pass to Andrews going like to his.
I mean, to be fair, the concept worked. Like, he was open. It's just, you know, again, you're relying on Lamar's accuracy, which is
a low percentage
of this game.
Yeah, it's a low percentage pass for him. The best passing work that he does is in the middle of the field.
Yeah, and we all know that. Absolutely.
We all know that. It's in his tape from Louisville. It's in his tape in the NFL. His best passes come across the middle of the field in some form. Why are you having him throw to the outside? Why? That's just, to me, it's just stupid. And I get it, you can't always be so obvious, but I just watched the Patriots win the ball game running the same fucking run play over and over and over. You know what? Execution matters. And if your highest percentage of execution is to the middle of the field, then find a fucking play that goes to the middle of the field. Like, put yourself in a situation that gives you the best opportunity to win. And if you're going to go for two, it should be your best play. Am I right? It should be your best play.
I mean, especially in this situation where you're trying to win the game against a divisional opponent in December. So
you gave home field away. Like, I hope you remember that when you're in Foxborough.
I just don't think this Baltimore team, the way that they've looked, like, I mean, they still have to play at Cleveland, Green Bay, at Cincy, the Rams, and then the Steelers again. This team was never getting home field. I'll tell you that right now. Unless they totally look different over this last month. I mean, this game didn't help, but this team was not getting home field. I don't trust anybody in the North. They're all capable of winning, but they're all capable of losing a dumb game.
Yeah, I don't fully trust them either, but I mean, You were in the driver's seat and you just jumped out.
I mean, the offense has to be worrying, because what is, you know, outside of Lamar running the ball, what does this offense do well? The last four games, 10 points against the Dolphins, 16 against the Bears, 16 against the Browns, 19 against the Steelers. They're just not putting up points.
Yeah, it's gone stale. Yeah. Ronnie has a clip about it. Somebody was pointing it out on the podcast, on a podcast that he was listening to. I mean, I've only been saying this since they hired Greg Roman, that it's got about a 2 to 3 year shelf life, and then it goes stale.
That's the truth about Greg Roman.
Every time, man. Speaking of going stale, what am I going to do with Kyle Shanahan and Jimmy G, man? I don't know what to do with this team. We can't beat Russell Wilson most of the time because Russell Wilson is just phenomenal. This is the worst fucking version of Russell Wilson we've ever seen, and he still won the game. How, man? I just can't. I can't. Both interceptions from Jimmy G were just fucking stupid. I mean, Kittle, 9 catches, 181 yards, and 2
touchdowns. He was incredible.
And we lost. We lost. Can he throw to himself? Is that possible? I'm still adamant. I don't think Trey is ready. He needs to sit for a year. But there's not a quarterback in the league that has it as easy as Jimmy G, and he just can't fucking execute. It's so easy. It's literally on tape. Like, I don't know how else to explain it to people, but like, it's the simplest passing offense in the league, I bet, as far as like the design that gets people open. They're always open in between the hashes. All our passes, every time you see Ayuk catch the ball, where is he? Somewhere in between the hashes or close to the hash. When you see Kittle, the majority of the time, where is he? Somewhere in between the hash or close to the hash. How do you miss these throws still? Like, this is the basis of your fucking offense. It's like not knowing how to spell when you've already learned the alphabet. Like, you're always once you learn the alphabet, you should know how to spell it at some point, right? You shouldn't have any trouble writing the letters because you know the alphabet. Like, you know what an A looks like. Put it on the fucking paper. This guy knows it's supposed to be A and draws B. Like, that's how stupid he is. It's the only way I can explain it. It's frustrating as fuck. I'm not too mad at Kyle per se. I think there was one particular play or one point where I called him a pussy, but that's like, that's like a weekly thing. We're just never going to see eye to eye on when to punt and when to go for it. It was a fucking fourth and one that he decided to do that same stupid ass fullback sneak thing that
he does love it. The fullback sneak.
Absolutely. We ran it once. It was beautiful, and it has never worked since. Because guess what? Most people are smart enough to realize that, yo, when he goes in motion, they know the play's coming. But yeah, Jimmy G's just—he's just not it, man. And I really want people to remember while they're hyping up the Patriots and Belichick that this is the guy that was almost his quarterback for the future because he wanted him over Tom Brady. So just keep that in mind, people.
Nobody's perfect. To give a little credit to Seattle on this one, a good job by their defense really containing the run game. San Francisco did not have a run longer than 9 yards in this game. That's difficult to do against the Kyle Shanahan offense, and that put everything on Jimmy G, which is what you want to do. So, I mean, yeah, the difference in this game was Jimmy G had a couple of turnovers, and that was it. I mean, they almost made up for it at the end with a – yeah, this is actually another example of a coaching decision I did not agree with, despite it normally being a situation where I like it. Pete Carroll went for it on 4th-and-1 from the San Francisco 4 with 6 minutes left. Normally, I love that. I love going for it inside another team's 5. You have 4th-and-short. Kicking a field goal would have put them up 10. Now, they actually converted the 4th down, and then 3 plays later, they fumbled the ball and gave it back to San Francisco. So it didn't immediately hurt them. But again, just kick a 22-yard field goal, go up 10 with 6 minutes left, and make San Francisco score twice. Instead, they ended up giving the ball back to you guys, and it almost came back to kill them. You guys went 95 yards down the field, just couldn't get the last 3. So,
well, I mean, he was going against Jimmy, so he figured, what the hell? I get it. Broncos, Chiefs, Teddy just didn't do enough this game. I mean, Patty didn't throw a touchdown, but threw an interception. It's just the Chiefs are the Chiefs, man. They're now in this realm where it's like, you know what? They found a way to win. It's good enough for now. Will we ever see Kansas City of old?
That's the whole question. At least, you know, I imagine we'll see something close to it at some point again with Patrick Mahomes because he's awesome. But are we going to see it this year? The only game we saw it was against the Raiders because the Raiders were like, hell yeah, we're going to stick to our cover 3, even though everyone else has proven they found a way to limit this offense. That's the only game where they've looked right in the last, 7-8 games? Like, it's been brutal. At least comparatively, it's been brutal. You know, the upside is their defense has played honestly great. I know not all these teams have been, you know, Denver's not an awesome offense, but again, they held Dallas to 9 points. So the defense is getting it done. If the offense just comes halfway between where they are now versus where they were last year, they should play in the Super Bowl again. And if they continue to play like this, though, then, yeah, Ronnie is going to be right. They're going to get their butts kicked at some point. Yeah. So that's the question is, will the offense have enough? Because right now the defense is doing more than you would have ever wanted, honestly, from this defense.
Yeah, and if I'm gonna bet on something, I would rather bet on the offense coming back than the defense like turning the corner. So it's good to see the defense is now officially turning the corner, and we're getting to a point where we're gonna stop asking questions about them and asking more questions about the offense. And I have confidence that the offense will figure it out a lot quicker than what the defense did this season. Because I was definitely calling for Spagnuolo to be fired, and now I'm like, you can stay today.
Hey man, Spags knows what he's doing. He had a couple of real bad years with the Giants, but the Giants never seem to have the right personnel for the most part. And then when he's the Rams head coach, but especially on a game, I think the best thing about Spags is that on a week to week basis, he can really throw stuff at people. And I think that's exactly what you want if you're a team that knows they're going to be in the playoffs. So, like, yeah, again, as I said last week, I'm high on this Patriots team. That didn't change this week. But I do wonder what happens to Mac Jones when he's got to play a Spags defense in the playoffs. So, you know, historically, that's gone well for the Spags defense against Patriots.
Hey, you know, again, I am waiting to have some questions answered. Speaking of the Patriots, all kind of questions, no answers on my end. How, why, what? Three passing attempts. And then when they did decide to actually, like, try to throw the ball, it was in a situation I thought they should have been running. It was like, what, 5 minutes left in the game, 5 to 6 minutes left in the game. They could have run some clock off. They went three and out and punted it back. So it was just a little weird. Obviously, the weather was kind of crazy this game as well. But come on, man. You can't give me a screen pass. Like,
I'm with you. Some people have been giving them a ton of credit. It's like, oh, they won by only throwing three passes. Yeah, that's impressive on some level, but really they had the Harris run, which is 64 yards. Otherwise they get two field goals the entire game. Wasn't an effective offensive strategy.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, man. Like, it just is. I mean, I'm not high on Mac Jones, but he ain't that damn bad.
You have to have some level of unpredictability, and when you just run it 20 straight times, you don't have that.
I don't know. Again, Bill won, and you know, fans say that's all that matters. But this only raises further concerns of mine with the office of execution in the red zone, because you're not gonna get these kind of games where you can kick five field goals and win often, especially in the playoffs. Like, you've got to score points. And I just want to see them be more aggressive.
Right. And it works because Buffalo had the exact same struggles in this game where they went 1-for-4 in the red zone. New England combined third and fourth downs, 3-for-14. Buffalo was 4-for-14. So it was, not surprisingly in those conditions, it was ugly all around. But, like, if you're Buffalo, obviously this hurts because now you're two games back and it's going to be difficult to catch the Patriots. But from a just playing the Patriots standpoint, I don't think if you're Buffalo, you're like, oh, man, we've got a bunch of problems the next time we play New England. I think you're thinking we should have won this game.